Hello again, it's John Udell. Today, Friday, and this weekend, the Wikimaniacs are gathering in Boston for the Wikimania convention. So this was a good time to have a chat with Ross Mayfield. He's the CEO of SocialText, one of several enterprise wiki companies. We discussed the recent announcement that SocialText will be open sourcing its wiki code. We talked about the integration of Dan Bricklin's WikiCalc with SocialText. And Ross brought his political scientist's perspective to bear on the intersection of wiki-based collaboration and open source software.
Hi, John. It's Ross Mayfield.
Hey, Ross. How you doing?
Doing pretty good.
I wanted to discuss the open source announcement that you made.
Right.
But perhaps first, for people that haven't heard the backstory, you should just kind of recap. It's been like, 4 years or so now?
Almost,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird angles to the open source story. I mean, part of it is a company that's been around for this long, you know, going even more open than we were before.
Right. Given that there are a zillion wiki implementations
right.
in the world, I mean, they've been done multiple times for every programming language in existence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was your original foundation that you built on top of?
Well, first we built a nice little wiki on our own, which lasted us for the first 6 months. Pete Kaminsky, my CTO and co-founder, who was really big on the potential of a wiki and as a better kind of object model for managing messages. Pete went out and hacked together a wiki. You know, anybody can. It's almost like a requirement for any graduate student to come up with one at some point.
I know. Everybody has to write an RSS reader. Everybody has to write a wiki. It's
exactly.
just a rite of passage.
Yeah. And then we hired a developer called Brian Ingerson, and we built on top of Quickie, an open source wiki framework.
Okay.
But there's a really big difference from where, well, we evolved the product over time so much that it actually barely even contained anything related to Quickie.
And what would the characteristics of Quickie have been as compared to other tools that people might know?
So Quickie was it was almost like Perl poetry, good. Modular and extensible framework for building a wiki.
Okay.
But, you know, where SocialText ended up going was, you know, the big differences that are out there now are not just so much in terms of very basic features, but kind of the ease of use that we needed to build towards for mainstream business users.
Yeah, well, that's one dimension of it, and I would guess that the ability to be providing hosted service
mm-hmm.
is another dimension, and a framework might or might not be friendly to that approach, right?
Right. So that ends up being a big part of it. So, I think the difference was while we've been a commercial open source company,
mm-hmm.
part of it was that, you know, Quickie on its own wasn't necessarily attractive for, you know, a developer audience, particularly of IT professionals.
Right.
And so this is us kind of coming full circle where we're releasing almost all of the code. We're only holding back on some administrative features.
Mm-hmm.
That help keep a low cost of ownership.
Now, in parallel to the work that you've been doing, obviously over the last 4 years or so, among others, Wikimedia has come on pretty strong.
Yeah.
That's probably, you could say, the dominant open source wiki right now, right?
And I've got some good news. Friday, we're announcing that WikiWig, our open source What You See Is What You Get editor,
mm-hmm.
is being adapted to work on top of MediaWiki by the folks over at Wikia.
Hmm.
Could potentially run on Wikipedia one day.
Hmm.
And, you know, the way we have to look at things is, you know, the more that people use wikis as a market leader, we end up winning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we're making contributions, not just in terms of practices for using wikis pretty publicly, but also in the form of code. So, yeah, MediaWiki has definitively grown into... I don't know if I would necessarily say they're the market leader, because the market is so fragmented with all the open source options that are out there, like Twiki as an example.
Yep.
But I would say, you know, the thing about MediaWiki is it is truly optimized for one purpose, for running an online encyclopedia.
Right.
And there are some pretty big differences for what you would need inside a company in terms of, you know, simple things like I want to create a new group. All I have to do is give it a name, add email addresses, and suddenly I have a new private wiki.
Right. Plus, inside your company, you're probably not anticipating that Stephen Colbert is going to send you a flood of traffic one day from his TV show. Right?
That's true. Exactly.
there had been a fair amount of interest in the business world in certain quarters. So, for example, I was in touch with a number of people who were using Twiki inside of organizations, usually inside of engineering organizations, for things like issue tracking and customer support. The folks who were technical and had heard of this stuff were making good use of it in a lot of the ways that would make sense for using a wiki in that kind of an environment. Against that backdrop, what was it that you were trying to do that would broaden this out, or that would be a different approach? Why not just align with Twiki, for example?
Well, and that's even something we'd considered. Mm-hmm. The important thing was we looked at what was out there, of course, right, to see what we could build upon, what communities we could join. You know, wikis had already been around for about 7 years when we'd started, thanks to Ward Cunningham. And by then, let's put it this way, it was very typical that you could find very early adopter, innovator groups, you know, within product development or engineering or IT, where someone had already gone and grabbed a wiki to scratch their own itch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so similarly, as blogs were being brought into the enterprise through consumer options that were out there, open source was the path for wikis. At the time, we saw a pretty big gap in the market, and that we actually thought could only be solved through a commercial entity. And in fact, we'd even considered the possibility of not necessarily making social text a product-oriented company, or making social text even a for-profit was one of the options. But we saw this opportunity for Wiki to grow up into a significant enterprise tool. And I think that was the real vision.
Mm-hmm. Part of it, or maybe most of it, mm-hmm. is not the technology, but the simply having the idea of, A, that it's possible to do this stuff, and B, here's how.
I think that's true. Also, the funny thing is, almost every single use case that we've come across has been one that a customer has invented first.
Right.
And then what we've done is to help them in terms of training, adoption, a little bit of management consulting, helping management even be comfortable with the idea of a wiki.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really the cultivation of those practices. But that said, the tool actually, I think, still has a ways to go. Initially, one of the things that we had to do to make it an enterprise-ready tool was to institute hard security. The ability to have, you know, private authenticated spaces was something that actually went against the grain of the wiki world and a lot of the purists out there who argued for soft security. We actually got some pretty negative reactions in the community initially by doing so. But then as we went on and did a number of things, such as, you know, having a tightly integrated weblogs, email integration, the main thing actually that arose over time was we kind of had two development tracks. One was making it as simple and easy to use as possible. And this becomes absolutely necessary when you do an enterprise-wide deployment. You are dealing with a very mainstream audience of people that aren't going to accept writing on any interface that's more complex than email. But on the other hand, it's adapting it for, you know, enterprise requirements, doing things like directory monitoring, backup, storage, search, portal integration, focusing on performance and scalability. I actually think on the tool side, there's still a lot of room for improvement, you know, and it's little tiny innovations that we've come up with, like Mickey, the mobile wiki, which we optimized for use on BlackBerrys but works in any other mobile browser. In one customer, we did a deployment that in 6 months we outpaced the traffic of the intranet to their Wikipedia inside use case. And the inflection points were simple usability things. When we integrated with their directory system for single sign-on usability, when we deployed WikiWig, or what you see is what you get editor, and then finally when we deployed Mickey, the mobile wiki. And so it's, in some ways, enhancements to the tool can be good inflection points. But also with each inflection point, that was an opportunity for us to jump in with some good practices about how to use the tool more effectively.
There is something that I call mode confusion. We have so many different modes of communication. When people confront a landscape where there is instant messaging and there is email and there is blogging and there is this shared space stuff, whether it's happening in Wiki or SharePoint or some other thing, then it's incredibly difficult for a lot of people to sort through in a given situation. All right, well, let's see. I've got to communicate this information to these people, and mm-hmm. I've got this array of ways of doing it. You know, I could blog it. I could go to the wiki and put it there. What are the trade-offs, right? And it's actually fairly subtle. You know, even for those of us who kind of live in that world, it can be a fairly subtle thing to make the right choices and to use these things in combination. That probably is as much or more of a challenge. You know, helping people to have this array of things and not be overwhelmed by it, right? And have the thing that you need in a particular circumstance surface as naturally as it can, right? You know, to be able to move work from one kind of environment to another kind of environment when it's appropriate to do so.
And the other problem with this modal confusion is everybody chooses different modes.
Right.
And some of them choose for different reasons. There are some people who are blog people, and some people will never be blog people. The way that identity is emphasized in a blog, how a blog is about individual voice, how it's a tool that's best used for communicating kind of one-to-many and then getting, you know, some trailing commentary feedback.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other people who are going to be wiki people, who want the identity of themselves and their words suppressed a little bit. Wiki is a little bit more about group voice.
It's not just a personal preference. It's a mm-hmm. it's a preference that has to do with what is the activity. So if the activity
right.
is something where a group needs to move to consensus,
right.
then the suppression of individual voice is a good thing. On the other hand, if it's something where someone wants to take a strong position, mm-hmm. and that's the appropriate thing, that's much harder to do in a wiki. That was one of the more astute comments I've seen about the Wikipedia, actually. The neutral point of view is not accidentally related to the nature of the technology.
I think neutral point of view works really well for what they're trying to produce. I think you could have other goal-oriented norms,
mm-hmm.
something like, let's say, a helpful point of view.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing is, you're absolutely right. It's not just about the individual preference for a given modality at a given time. It's what is the preference of a group. And the workflow will span, in many cases, from, communicating in collaborative sense-making through blog conversation into some lighter weight documentation or summary of the conversation.
Yeah.
So Andrew McAfee from Harvard wrote this really good paper in MIT Sloan Management Review called Enterprise 2.0. And his view was the real virtue was how this was free form, how we're not structuring the workflow, hard coding the workflow up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead, what you get is a more emergent structure as a byproduct of use.
Yeah. At the same time, we see recently a move toward injecting more structure into wikis, whether it's WikiCalc, which I guess is something that you work with, Dan Bricklin's web spreadsheet, or in the JotSpot case, a much more aggressive approach to putting structured data and now applications that are based on structured data into the context of the wiki.
That's definitively what we're not trying to do in our case. And I would say, so TwiKi preceded Jot with the same kind of model of a structured wiki, right?
Yeah, they had a forms package in there, didn't they?
Yeah, and a little bit more. Let's put it this way. The problem with adding structure as in here's a scripting language to create a form-based application is it breaks one of Ward Cunningham's original principles for how to design a wiki, which is it should be a collaboration platform for experts and novices alike. Right? When you suddenly allow do something more advanced than just writing and creating links, not everybody's going to be able to have that power.
What do you mean not everybody's going to be able to have it?
Well, what it ends up doing is it fragments the collaboration, right? Not only do you have some people, let's put it this way, you could be in the middle of collaborating in a certain way, and someone could go, you know what, I've just created this new widget. We should all work through this next workflow step through my widget.
Right.
And that structure that person designed might possibly be obsolete the second that it's created because of changes in the environment.
Right.
But it also might not necessarily fit others.
Agreed. But so in your case, for example, at some point someone can say, let's embed a WikiCalc in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
because, well, you know, what we're trying to do here, you know, maybe it's not even numeric, right? As many spreadsheet use cases are not. You know, maybe it's simply we need 2D layout, which is actually know, what spreadsheets get used for an awful lot, right? So
So we held off for years, literally, before trying to take an approach for managing and working with structure. And then we were lucky enough to find a way to work with Dan Bricklin, partially because, you know, we shared some common philosophies about open source. But, you know, also, you have to think about what Dan is really doing. A spreadsheet is a lot like a wiki. It starts as a blank page.
Yep.
And then you have a lot of practices that have evolved, in this case, over years, for how to use a spreadsheet.
Yep.
Right? It is the one interface that people know for managing and working with structure and even for building applications, right? Mm-hmm. So the benefit is we get to build upon existing knowledge and practices. There's also some things that Dan's doing that's different. You know, he goes around and reinvents the spreadsheet every 10 years. This time, you have to think about some of the differences where you literally have a revision history for every change you would make, even to a cell, any action that you can fall back upon. That's something that even very basic, isolated spreadsheet use could benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, you know, there's a lot of promise in the tool that is goes well beyond solving this common problem of playing email volleyball all day with Excel attachments.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, yeah. It's obviously a good thing. It just and this is one of those unanswerable questions is, you know, sort of where do you draw the line in terms of the extent to which the in this case, spreadsheet is, you know, inside, quote unquote, inside the wiki, or is just, you know, linked to it, right? I mean, we've been going around and around on this ever since, you know, Olay 1.0 and probably before, and we probably will be for a long time. You know, yes, the spreadsheet's the most basic thing, but the calendar is a dominant metaphor, and, you know, there are all kinds of other things that could in principle benefit from being in this environment, but you know, ultimately, you're not going to put every, like you said, you know, it's not your ambition to put everything into it, right?
Right.
What's the way to finesse the relationship between other kinds of productivity tools and this one?
And that's where I think things like the APIs that we just released with the open source version come into play.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right now, we have just a SOAP API, and we're working on a more fully featured REST API.
Uh-huh.
It's really important for us to also support more standard options like the Atom API, which people really only use for weblog content, but we see a lot of virtue for wiki content as well.
Right. So this is this would be a two-way kind of thing. That is to say, I can set it up so that the wiki page is, you know, kind of feeding outside stuff into itself, and I can also inject stuff into it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So let's go back to this this question of the relationship of Social Text, the company, to a population of open source developers. And then on the other side, there are your customers. You exist as an intermediary between those two groups. And so what are the roles that you can play, and what are the responsibilities that you have, and what are the opportunities that you see around that?
You share control to create value, right? You see this both in lots of these so-called Web 2.0 business models. You see it in the way that people use wikis, and you see it definitively within open source. The commercial open source business model, to me, is this perfect balance between freedom and profit motive, right? That I wish, as a business model, we could bring to other kinds of businesses beyond just open source.
You mean beyond open source software?
Beyond open source software.
Yeah.
Yeah. You already see it in other very information intensive industries and segments, such as, in effect, any business that's being built on top of a community or with a community, right? What I really welcome about it is what we'll end up having is a community that keeps us in check. Actually, a good analogy, given what we do for a living. So Peter Drucker wrote a paper called The New Pluralism a long time ago, pointing out that enterprises didn't really pay attention to employees as stakeholders. There wasn't that pluralistic dialogue with management. Similarly, there are different constituencies, you know, besides shareholders, that if you run your business right and you're able to accept the way that these different stakeholders will provide checks and balances, you'll be driven towards more optimal outcomes as a company. The decision to go open source was twofold. One is, definitively, by letting go of control, you end up getting a sales and marketing benefit. You get zero-cost sales and marketing. I'm able to reach a different kind of technical buyer that previously I just simply couldn't reach. Mm-hmm. Be too expensive. I think that part is fairly well known and understood. I have to have modest expectations for the second goal, which is fostering a developer community.
Right.
That really does take time, and right. there's a lot more risk
right.
as to whether we're going to be able to work with the community.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that the closest analogy was with Zope Corp, but now really I see that that's not quite true because, of course, Zope was always an open source project.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two things there. One is having a code base that was largely we only had a small fraction of it that we had been releasing as open source and making contributions to in the form of Quickie, and then later through WikiWig.
Mm-hmm.
But then, the decision, here's the thing, for any company making the decision about whether to open or not, Steven Weber pointed out that there isn't the equivalent of a buy versus build framework for informing the decision to open, right? Whether mm-hmm. it be opening intellectual property or other kinds of, any other kind of architecture for people to participate.
Mm-hmm.
So we lack those kinds of frameworks, and unfortunately you have to base a decent amount of the decision a little bit on gut and a lot on the conversations that you've had. The second part is, in terms of what our role is, I think that we are going to have to mediate the communication between the commercial side and the open source side, definitively,
mm-hmm.
right? But the question is, what's kind of our value add in this role, right? In this case, we're starting off by contributing an asset for people to build upon, right? But what's interesting is, let's put it this way, on the commercial side, we're going to get certain kinds of requirements that the open source side would not come up with, and vice versa.
Right.
And part of the discipline that we have to offer up is, if you think about open source projects, traditionally, usability and interaction design is not its greatest strong suit.
You think?
Well, there's only a couple exceptions to that, like Firefox, for example.
Yeah.
And in that case, there's a really clear reference model they were building against or towards.
Yeah.
Right? So when we have to be held accountable for mainstream usability on the one side, that's going to end up making sure that the contributions that we're getting from the open source side are going to get a different kind of improvement. Let's put it this way, on the commercial side, before we made the decision, we had to talk with our customers, of course, right?
Mm-hmm. And what different reactions did you get back?
The first questions are, okay, so what's the difference here of continuing to work with them? And I think, for most of the enterprises, they'll choose the commercial version because what they get is software as a service, whether it's delivered through hosted service or appliance-based on-site deployment. But then the other part is the services themselves, whether it be on the engineering side or whether it be more on the management consulting side. And I do think, it's also interesting how in some ways we've already been operating like this. The differences between open source and wiki use are not that different, right? Coding is vertical information assembly. Every contribution's got certain dependencies and interdependencies. Wiki use is more horizontal information assembly, where you don't have those interdependencies. But what we still get is people sharing, a form of code. And, if somebody, for example, contributes a best practice for how they're using the wiki on the social text customer exchange, and that person might be a customer who's using social text personal, which is just free for 5 users, the hosted service.
Right.
Right. In that case, that person isn't necessarily contributing value to the community in terms of cash, but that person sharing different practices, right? And so I've got this weird blog post that kind of illustrates this called The Power Law of Participation. I think when you're trying to figure out your business model, Tim O'Reilly's written, of course, about architecture of participation. But the point is to recognize that you have lots of potential constituencies for your company. Some are going to be able to contribute value in the firm in the form of cash that will look to fund certain kinds of development and rigid requirements that come with that, right? Others will contribute in terms of practices for using the tool, will add value by being simply part of the community. Others are going to contribute in the form of bug reports and patches and even code.
Another thing I'm interested in is this whole question of hosting and scale out. And I would guess that one piece of your calculation is that by open sourcing this stuff, you connect to people who can help you navigate what is a very rapidly changing landscape in terms of how hosted services are going to be delivered, are going to operate at scale, are going to be managed, and so on. I don't know if you saw the thing that Les Orchard did a week or two ago with Amazon S3. Did you see that? Yeah. So, yeah, what he had done, just, you know, for people that haven't seen it, he took the TiddlyWiki idea, which is a single page wiki that uses JavaScript and then persists the information right back into the same HTML file. He basically ported that to S3's disk in the cloud, if you will, which I just thought was fascinating. It really has got my mind spinning about how it is that we get to this kind of global infrastructure for services. And so, I mean, to kind of close the loop here then, that, you know, there's lots of good ideas inside your company, I'm sure, about how to navigate that transition. But the more you can be connected to a wider world of developers, I think the better it is for you, right?
Right. And I think, you know, to date, we've developed a definitive competency in how to, you know, how to host our wikis, both through the hosted service, but then also doing appliance-based deployments, which is, to us is just another delivery model of software as a service.
Yeah.
But I think you're right in that we have a lot more to learn. And one way, I'll give you an illustration. So with WikiCalc, for example, you can set it up on multiple servers, and you can be linking from one cell to another, even though it may be on another server.
Mm-hmm.
I have, like, these visions of one day you could end up creating the global spreadsheet out of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, that's going to be left, you know, for most likely for others to implement first.
Yeah.
Because we've chosen to release it standalone under an open source license first.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's those hypothetical cases that we're not going to anticipate and some part of the community is going to pull us towards.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Right.
In the end, I don't know that we know what's going to happen next. You know, I know that my job's changing and that I've got a new community that I have to pay attention to.
Yep.
And, you know, I know that if I don't wield whatever supposed power I've got, that I'm not going to have a community is pretty obvious. and I also think, you know, even if I'm not with Social Text forever, I think the same thing will be true for what other leadership there is within the company, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, we'll have to see, because we were talking earlier, you were raising a question of, let's say, how does a spreadsheet fit within Social Text,
mm-hmm.
right? Or does Social Text fit within the spreadsheet? Part of it is, I think there's answers to those questions you can't answer that the community might provide. Otherwise, you know, we've got a long road ahead of us in working, let's say, integrate WikiCalc and Social Text, both in the open source distribution and the commercial distribution, throughout the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you one thing that, so WikiCalc today is only available in an open source distribution.
Right.
And we're learning a ton from use cases that people are contributing and even code that people are contributing, even though we're not ready to accept it just yet.
And WikiCalc is still beta, is it?
It's still beta.
Yeah.
And we're going to start taking contributions when we get it to 1.0, which is around the corner.
There's a lot of possibilities, and when you roll in the web services angle, there are even more possibilities. And I think that that's ultimately how you get to this mix and match kind of integration that I was imagining.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so anybody who steps up to the plate and provides those interfaces as well as is prepared to consume them is going to be in a really interesting position. And then, like you said, you know, it's where do people want to take it? You know, you just have to be able to, you have to be prepared to move in whatever direction is the way the wind is blowing. Yeah, I like it. It sounds good.
Yeah.